live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Why don't we go with last night's matchup? Why don't we go back, actually? Why don't we go back about 2 weeks? Let's go all the way back, maybe 12 days. Remember less than 2 weeks ago when everybody was throwing dirt on the Patriots? Everybody was scribbling their obit. You remember? Tom Brady didn't have enough weapons. And even if Brady did have weapons, it wouldn't matter because Brady has gassed out. Brady hates the hood. The dynasty officially dead. I mean, I know we've heard that a number of times in the past, but this time it was real. The dynasty is dead. And the fact is, that was not the worst take ever. They, the Patriots, were flatlining. I mean, getting shut down by the Jags defense is one thing. That'll happen. But getting locked up by the Detroit Lions, a team that gave up 48 to the Jets? I mean, less than 2 weeks ago, TB12 threw for 133 yards against a one-win team. Not in the first half, but in the entire game. They couldn't run it. Those turnstiles and matadors on the O-line were not blocking anybody. And as good as Gronk is, he's not going to beat double coverage consistently, especially when none of the guys around him could beat single coverage consistently. So despite the Patriots starting slowly in the past, I have to admit, it didn't look good. Didn't look good, but less than 2 weeks later, does anybody remember any of that? Hell, did any of that even happen? Because if it did, I'm having a tough time recalling it. And if it did, it sure as hell doesn't matter now, right? Because 12 days later, it's the same as it ever was, except maybe even better. No weapons. No weapons, or weapons across the freaking board. And this is why you can't throw dirt on these guys. This is why you can never throw dirt on the Patriots. This is why you can't say the end was near, the dynasty is dead. Because last night, it was the Colts who were getting pushed into a shallow grave. And yes, I'm well aware, the Colts are a jacked up football team. A jacked up, one-win team that wouldn't stay down, kept trying to get back up, nearly came back last night. Sort of. Not really. You know, it's not even about that. Because it's not about what the Pats did to the Colts. It's about what the Pats are about to do to most everybody else in the weeks to come. Because the fact is, that game last night wasn't nearly as close as the final score indicated. The 38 that the Pats scored should have been 48. Hell, the 48 could have been 58. And as soon as all these dudes do get on the same page as TB12, watch the hell out. Because then it will be the same old Patriots, except maybe even better. Now we know why the hood used a first-rounder on Sony Michel. Because this guy can straight up ball. The Pats have not had a first-round running back on the roster since Lawrence Maroney. And I'm pretty sure that Sony did more in one night than Kool-Aid did in 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I liked Lawrence Maroney. Except Sony is the real deal. And he's not the only one. Now you know why also Josh Gordon gets so many chances. Now you know why Josh Gordon gets chance after chance after chance. The guy played 18 snaps. Just 18 snaps. But one of them was good enough to produce a wow moment like this.
From the Colt 34, Brady with a play fake to Michelle. Stands in the pocket. Bouncing right. Sliding back left. Directing traffic. A lot of time to launch a long high arcing pass to the end zone. Caught by Gordon in the right side of the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
So sexy, Flash Gordon!
Number 500 in the regular season career of Tom Brady!
What a way to get to 500 to have this kid catch it!
That's why. That's why that guy gets so many chances. That's why Cleveland waited on him as long as they could, and that's why the Patriots scooped him right up. Because he does things like that. And he stretches defenses. Uh-oh! Tommy's got a guy who can stretch a defense. You think that makes him very dangerous? That was TD pass number 500 for TB12. Only Pinky. Well, by the way, Pinky's here today. Flight deck in the house. Only Pinky and the old gunslinger are in that club. The 500 TD club. And TB12 is the only guy who did it for one team. And when those dudes hit that number, here's the difference. When old Pinky and the slinger hit that number, the end was near. With Brady, looks like he's just getting started. Hell, even love the old slinger. Even the hood himself had something nice to say about his star quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous. It's a lot of touchdown passes to a lot of different guys too. So, Tom's, no quarterback I'd rather have than Tom Brady. So he does a great job, week in and week out, year in and year out. All the situations. I mean, he does a great job.
Listen to this guy, man. He opens up his mouth and diarrhea pours out. You can't shut him up all of a sudden. This guy won't stop talking. Yeah, so, great quarterback.
Diarrhea.
Yeah, hey, come on over here. Hey, I want to give you a big kiss. Come on over here. Yeah, a lot of different guys. Yeah, like 71 different guys. I think my favorite part of that stat was that's the record for most different guys to throw a TD pass that he had with Vinny Testaverde. Vinny Testaverde was awesome. Man, this dude had a gun. It's all about the you. Hey, I like Tom. You know, all that crap, anyway. On to, Damn, Hood. I gotta hear that again, Alvin. This guy literally, the Hood literally is slobbering all over himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous.
Yeah,
It's a lot of touchdown passes to a lot of different guys, too. So
let me stop right there. Smartest guy ever. This guy's like Vince Lombardi, George Halas, Bill Parcells, Newt Rockne, all rolled into one. And what's his take? That's a lot of touchdown passes to a lot of different guys.
He does a great job.
You know what I like about Tom? He plays football.
He does a great job.
Yeah, great job. Like I said, the Hood's slobbering all over himself. Even the Hood can't contain himself. And in a couple of weeks, nobody's going to be able to contain that offense. Look, don't get it twisted. I'm not going to hand them the Lombardi right now. I'm not saying that they went out and they rolled a playoff team. They didn't. Colts were game. They were tough. But they're banged up. They're undermanned. They're a year or two away from scaring anybody. And I'm not saying that I don't still have questions about the Patriots, because I do, especially on the defensive side of the ball. What I am saying is this. This is a reminder, not that we should have needed one, but it's a reminder that when it comes to the AFC, it is still the Patriots and everybody else, just as it has been for the past 15 years. Nothing new. Same as it ever was. Try to throw dirt on these guys, and they will rip that shovel out of your hands and smash you in the face with it. There are some nice teams in the AFC. In fact, they're going to run into one of them this week. But until further notice, the conference still runs through New England. And by further notice, I mean pretty much until TB12 and the Hood shut it down. And from the looks of things, that's not going to happen. Not yet. Not anytime soon. They're not dead. And once they get this thing rolling once again, they could be scarier than ever. Weapons. Lots and lots of weapons. And it's not just Julian Edelman. Edelman made a difference. Man, how does that guy miss more than 600 days and then show up like that? Like, he looked exactly the same as he ever has. You know, had one bad drop, but looked exactly the same. And more importantly, they look the same. Safety Tony Jefferson is my guest. Tony, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Ron?
Good, good. Great to talk to you, Tony. Appreciate it. Listen, before we talk about Cleveland, let me get you to go back for a minute to talk about that win at Pittsburgh, where you got out to a 14-0 lead. The Steelers come back to tie it, and then you shut them down, shut them out in the second half. I mean, you'll take any win you can get, but how special is it to go into Heinz Field and dominate the Steelers the way you guys did?
Hey, we had a lot of fun, man. We know going up into Heinz Field in that environment, with the energy and the expectations of that game, you know, we knew what type of game it would be. Everybody was prepared. We had a great week of practice. Went up there and executed the game plan, and we had a lot of fun up there. So anytime you go up to Heinz Field and get a W, it's a good thing.
Tony Jefferson's my guest. All right, so you've got Cleveland coming up next and Baker Mayfield. The two of you, Tony, are OU legends. I know that he texted you this week. What kinds of things has he been saying to you, and what have you said back to him?
Well, first we had to handle business first, and I was talking about OU Texas. We expect to win by 30. So if that doesn't happen, you know, I don't know if we've had a good game, but you know, we had to take that out of the way. But you know,
bro, 30
competitive. Oh yeah, we got to win by 30.
All right,
that's a must. We got to beat Texas by 30. That's the type of team we got. But with Baker's competitiveness, you know, me and him were going back and forth. So you know, hopefully I can take the ball off his hands a couple times.
You will not find a bigger sports weekend than this weekend. NFL, college football, NHL, the biggest fight in UFC history. You can bet on it all at MyBookie. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Ravens safety, Tony Jefferson, my guest. So when you look at him right now, what's your biggest concern when it comes to stopping Mayfield and the Browns offense?
I mean, they got a lot of talent there. They did a great job with what they've done as far as getting guys on a team that can play. Obviously, Jarvis, you know, what he's done in this league so far has been tremendous with his weapons and the tight end, Joku, who's athletic, can run, and Callaway, man. that guy has to run a 4-1 on film, man. So, you know, we got to have our P's, be on our P's and Q's and ready to roll. This isn't your typical rookie quarterback. Baker's got it.
Tony Jefferson's my guest. He's not your typical rookie, and he does have it. I'll tell you what he's got. He's got confidence. He's got a lot of confidence. So let me ask you this. As a veteran defense, can you use that confidence against him and maybe bait him into some mistakes?
I think that's a possibility. I think us as a defense, with what we do, with our versatility and with the knowledge of the veteran guys that we have, we have the opportunity to do some stuff like that and to confuse the opposing offenses. We can get a little sexy at times, but you know sometimes we also want to keep it vanilla, you know, and run our defense that we do. So we're looking forward to that.
We're talking to Tony Jefferson. You know, Tony, in an era right now where offense is the focus, it feels like you and the Ravens defense are a real throwback to a time where guys really got after each other, really hit each other. How would you describe the attitude of the defense this year?
I think we're just – everybody's hungry, man. If you look at how the season ended last year, we had a sour taste in our mouth from that. And I think it carried on to the offseason. Everybody was working extremely hard. And we were biting to get back on the field. And, you know, the good thing about it is we had pretty much everybody come back this year from last year. So you know, we kind of all had the same mentality. And that was to go out there, be aggressive, go get cats, and have them worry about us than us be worried about them.
You know, you and I talked about that over the summer. And we talked about how last season ended, how hard you took that personally, and you want to win as badly as anybody. How much did that, the way that season ended, motivate you throughout the entire offseason and then coming into this season?
Oh, it was huge, man. There was times where my trainer, he had told me to settle down. I was working out. There was a time I was working out 7 days a week. Sometimes I couldn't sleep, so I hit him up around like 4 or 5 in the morning, tell him meet me in the gym. He's like, hey, man, You gotta control your body, man. You don't want to do all that, but that's just the tell of the tape right there, man. I couldn't wait to get back on the field. I made improvements personally with my body getting stronger, faster, quicker, and I think that's helped me out this year so far.
No days off. Tony Jefferson, my guest. Now, my man Eric Weddle made no secret of the fact, Tony, that he wanted you in Baltimore, and he played an active role in recruiting you. What's the chemistry like between the two of you, both on and off the field?
Well, I don't really know how to put it, but he was one of my guys at my wedding, so I think that can speak for off the field how close we are. You know, he's sincerely like a brother to me, so obviously off the field we're real close, and we actually are we're pretty much neighbors in San Diego, so we have a July 4th basketball game at his house that he does annually. This July was my first time in it, and I was on the opposing team of his, and we won. And that was the first time he's lost on his little basketball game, and I got to beat him at his own home court. So I think he's still a little sour about that. But I told him he'll get his opportunity next summer. But our chemistry on the field has been great. It's growing each and every week, learning off him, learn how to play off each other, and successful.
Hey, Tony, if you went into his house and you beat him in his game, I know he's your guy and you're his guy. I would not expect another invite back if you did that to him at his house. Who was in that run? Who else played in that game?
It's a bunch of his friends, you know, friends he grew up with, friends he's met. And like I said, he's been undefeated in those games. And it was for me and the random team that I had been on, I didn't have any team chemistry with those guys. But it was like going into Heinz Field, man. We were the away team. went on his court. He's got a big W in the center of his court for Weddle, but I told him he might as well change that to a T for Tony, because that's my court now.
Tony Jefferson joining us. That's tremendous. Listen, when you guys play the way you play defensively, and you're flying around and you're that physical, you know the way the game is right now. You know the way the game is called right now. So how do you find the balance between bringing that physicality and trying to intimidate people without drawing flags at the same time, when there's so many rules that are designed to protect offensive players? How then do you approach it?
I don't approach it any differently. I think prior to the rules and all the changes and stuff, I think I was playing safe. I think I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. So I told myself, you know, going into the season, don't change the way you play. Don't slow down. Don't think about it. If they happen to throw a penalty, and you know, maybe it puts us backed up into our red zone, then got to make a play. But you know, I don't want to slow myself down or anything like that. Just play football, play smart, and hit them as hard as you can, because this is the only time you can hit people and not get in trouble for it. So why not do it and have some fun with it?
And get paid for it. Tony Jefferson, my guest, you know, on CBS Sports Network, they are our TV partner. They had a graphic up on Terrell Suggs. You know, I haven't talked to T. Sizzle in a few years now, but he's come on the program quite a bit. What can you say about this guy? How is it that at this stage of his career, he is still as dominant and as effective as he is? And how much of an impact does he have on guys in the locker room?
Man, he's a humongous leader, bro. He comes in here every morning, you see him getting his body right. He's the voice of this team, man. When he speaks, everybody listens, and we go accordingly to how he moves, especially on defense. You know, he's been on those teams. He's been on those dominant defenses. So we know he knows exactly what he's talking about. So we try to follow his lead, man. He's been a great leader for us, and specifically for me too, just to be able to watch him and, you know, to know that's the future Hall of Famer right there, and to watch what he does. If you're smart, you would try and follow his footsteps. So I think he's a great role model for everybody in the locker room, and we all look up to him, and I'm glad he's on my team.
Raven safety, Tony Jefferson, my guest. Listen, one last thought, kind of off the board. I had a conversation with Tom Haberstroh, Tony, who's an NBA analyst, and he talked about the impact social media has on NBA players and how some guys delete Twitter and Instagram from their phones during the season. You get off Twitter during the season. Why is that, and how much do you feel like you benefit from being away from it during the season?
Oh, yeah. Being off the Twitter for me during the season is huge. You know, the thing about social media now is that it gives everybody an essentially a voice. And, you know, whether you have a good game or bad game, everyone's going to let you know. And I just felt like, you know, at this point in my career, year six, I'll just hold off until after the season. You guys can tell me how you feel after the season. You know, I'm focused on ball. You know, I don't want to get on my phone and see all the mentions or whatever. So I think it's just benefiting me. Hey, put the phone down. Pick up the book, you know, be with your family, that type of stuff. I'm trying to steer away from being on the phone as much as possible, because if you look at it, a lot of times we spend a lot of time on our phone and less time with what's really important. And, you know, that's just kind of personally what I've been doing.
So game one of the NLDS, Dodgers 6, Braves nothing. Could not have gone any worse for Atlanta. Could not have gone any better for L.A. because that was a straight-up wax job. and it's going to have a ripple effect. It did not take long to see how this game was going to go, because in the very first inning, we had a dead giveaway of a couple of things to come. Hyunjin Ryu was embarrassing fools from the bump, and that was clear early on. On top of that, the Dodgers were mashing from the box, and it took Jock Peterson all of three pitches to set the tone for the entire evening.
0-2, Peterson awaits. Here's the pitch. Fly ball, right center field, way back there, and it is gone, a home run.
You know, at that point, you could have sent everybody home. You know, because for all the hand-wringing about Dave Roberts' decision to start Ryu, the Braves were never going to touch that guy last night. They weren't catching up to him, and they sure as hell were not running L.A. down. Not with Max Muncy doing Max Muncy things.
And the 1-0 is a fly ball into center field. Going back is MC Yardhay at the wall. He looks up, and it's a three-run home run for Max Muncy. And the Dodgers take a 4-0 lead.
Max freaking Muncy if you need him, and the Dodgers do. And they're damn happy to have this guy, especially given where this guy came from. Nobody saw a 27-year-old minor league lifer coming out of nowhere to lead that team in walks and slugging percentage, only to go on and to crush a mammoth three-run dong in his first playoff game. But here's Muncy acting like he's been there before when obviously he hasn't. Where would they be without this guy? That game was over two innings in, and the Braves knew it, which is why they yanked their pitcher. Mike Fultonenes, they put him on ice right away just in case this series should come back to L.A., which, from the looks of things, probably will not. Ibuprofen. If the Braves did not know that game was over, two innings in, Ryu made damn sure they were aware of it from that point on. Seven innings, no runs, no walks, eight strikeouts. It's a hell of a day. Have yourself a day. An even better day when it's on a day that the skipper handed you the rock over the face of the franchise and arguably one of the best to ever do it. And wasn't that the big storyline coming in? The Dave Roberts pulling Clayton Kershaw into his office and telling his horse that he was not going to go with him in game one. And even though Kersh reportedly didn't like it, it was the right move. And it had absolutely nothing to do with Kershaw's postseason struggles. It was not a confidence thing. It was not a personal thing. It was about tactics and strategy. It's about setting up your rotation. It's about having both guys going on the same amount of rest. It's smart. It was the right move for Dave Roberts. I said that before the game. I'm saying it right now. And it still would have been the right move even if Ryu got rocked last night. And again, it's not the right move because it worked. It's the right move because it's the right move. So let me say one more time. Anybody arguing that the Dodgers have the wrong guy managing that team are simply talking out their ass. Stop doubting this guy. He knows his staff. He knows his clubhouse. He knows what the hell he's doing. Let him do his job. The only thing better than Kershaw going in game one on normal rest is Kershaw going in game two with a 1-0 series lead and an extra day of rest. This is the way Doc set it up. And it played out perfectly. Never doubt the Doc. He's been making an ass out of doubters and haters since he showed up on that scene and took over that clubhouse. This guy's been through so many ups and downs with this team and somehow manages to keep it all together every single year. That's not luck. That's not an accident, and neither is the fact that he's had them in the postseason every single year since he got there and had them in Game 7 of the World Series last year. Man, how deep are these guys, too? On a night where Kershaw doesn't pitch, Machado, Grandal, Bellinger, and Puig, they all combine to go 0 for 14, they still win 6-0. So look, I'm not going to say this series is over. I would never say any series is over after one game, especially if that one game is just the home team handling its business. But it's going to be tough to see Atlanta coming back on LA, considering how they handled their business last night. No, the series isn't over. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is maybe it's time now for people to shut up about the Dodgers. And more importantly, shut up about Dave Roberts. He's the right guy in the right spot. And I'm going to argue with the right team. And that was the right call. And now the guy looks really smart. But it would have been the right call regardless. We are joined by their head coach, Josh Heupel. Josh, great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate you having me on.
Good to have you on. All right, so you're averaging nearly 50 a game, 600 yards per game on offense. You are 4-0. You've blown out everybody you faced. As I mentioned, Josh, number 12 in the AP poll. You and I spoke back in December. So first things first, what has the first month of the season at UCF been like for you?
It's been a lot of fun. We've had a bunch of home games. We've had three straight home games. Our fan base has been phenomenal, packed the stadium every single week. We've walked out to a great environment, a competitive advantage for us. Looking forward to seeing that again on Saturday night. And it's been a lot of fun just in year one, getting to go out and compete with our guys, get to know them a little bit, and enjoy a bunch of wins.
All right, so speaking of that joint, you've got SMU at the Bounce House tomorrow night. For those who have never been, what's the atmosphere like in your joint when it really gets rocking?
Now, I'll tell you what, you know what's unique, Jim, and I've been a lot of different places. When you go out 60 minutes before kickoff, man, our student section is absolutely packed every single night. So during warmups, it's a great atmosphere. You run out that tunnel at kickoff, the place is packed. You know, they call it the bounce house because they're jumping up and down and the stadium's literally shaking. Before we walk out the locker room, before the opening kickoff, you can see the roof of the locker room moving up and down. It's pretty unique, a lot of fun, a lot of energy. And that's the great thing about our place and what this program and this university, how fast it's grown and continued to be built, is just the youthfulness and energetic atmosphere that we have surrounding our entire program.
UCF head football coach Josh Heupel joining us. Now, I had your quarterback, Mackenzie Milton, on the program a few weeks back. I'm sure you had a pretty good idea what you were getting and how good he was when he first arrived. But is there something maybe you know about him now that you didn't know then?
Man, I didn't know he was this good until I got a chance to be around him. He's a special playmaker, man, and I've coached some good ones, a couple guys that have gone and won Heisman trophies, been around. This guy's special and he's dynamic, man. He's a great decision maker, does a great job of handling all our protections, and is dynamic as a playmaker with his feet, and everybody across the country has seen that. But the most unique thing about him that I know now is just how cool and calm he is on game day and how much he loves competing, man. He's got a great competitive spirit about him, but a really calm demeanor on the sidelines. No matter what happens, he's ready to go out and play ball.
Josh Heupel joining us. You know, the team is 4-0. The program has won 17 straight. When you have that kind of success, it might be easy for the players to get kind of comfortable, maybe complacent, maybe start to believe the hype around them. How do you go about preventing that from happening and making sure that they're focused on going 1-0 every single day?
Yeah, we really do talk about what you just said right there. Our mantra since we got here in January has been only worry about today, go 1-0 today. Our focus is each week we want to go 1-0. What's going to happen in the future or what's behind us has absolutely no bearing on what's important, and that's today. Our kids have really bought into that. As we've gone through the season, I think they've gotten better practicing early in the week on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. That's led to us playing our best football on Saturdays. Each week we've grown as an entire program, just getting to know each other and know what we're doing in all three phases of the game. Our players love playing football. I love that about them. We talked this week about not falling into a competitive sleep, meaning that you got to understand that you have to go out and take it. You got to go earn it one play at a time. And the way you prepare is ultimately going to dictate how you have an opportunity to play.
I mean, you sound just like a coach's son, of course, which I'll get to in a minute. But to this very point, you enjoyed yesterday, or I should say last Saturday's win, for about an hour and a half. You spent some time with your family. You jumped in the pool, and then you went right back to work. As I mentioned, you are the son of a coach. So is that something that's just hardwired into you, Josh? Or did you have to develop that discipline to focus on the next game almost immediately?
I think that's really the way, you know, most competitors are. That's the way I was as a player. The great thing about living in Florida is after a ball game, you know, you get home at 8:30 and you can go jump in the pool with your kids, have fun. You know, we practice in the morning, so by the time you get to Tuesday morning, you better have your game plan in. We meet with our players Monday night to install it. Because of that, we have a really quick turnaround, and so your Sunday's got to be really productive. And we're back in the meeting rooms where is a staff on Sunday. So at the end of the day, enjoy it. We want our players to enjoy it. They get Sundays off coming on Monday, but you got to have a quick turnaround in sports and understand you're only as good as your next one.
UCF head coach Josh Heupel joining me for a few more moments. There's this legendary story, though, about you riding home with your dad after a tough loss when he was coaching, and you were pointing out that the other team was in radar defense and the flats were open, and your father's team only threw to the flats twice. Legend has it you were seven, Josh, at the time. Is it true, and what do you remember about that?
Yeah, I'm surprised I survived that ride home, to be honest. Yeah, my dad was a high school coach at the time. And just understanding what they called things, you know, being around the practice field, it was a tough loss for him and one that I remember actually still to this day. And I can't believe I said that to him in the car ride home. But he gives it back to me now. He's a retired coach, and he's on the sidelines, and he certainly brings up his side of the story a little bit too.
Man, that's something else. I was going to say, are your kids – Hannah or Jace second-guessing any of your calls yet, and does your dad?
Not yet, man. My little guy just started. He just started playing some football this year. He got beat on a Hail Mary in his first ball game, but he's enjoying it. And then my daughter was in here the other night after our radio show on Wednesday night. And we're talking about the game plan board and all the situations and stuff. So she's probably the biggest fan of football, man. When I go home on Wednesday or Thursday night and get a chance to be with the family, she's the one that's turning it to football and wants to sit down and watch the TV.
Man, that is the best. All right, so before you go, because of the numbers the offense is putting up and because Milton's playing as well as he has, maybe it's easy to overlook your defense. How pleased are you with the way the defense has shown up in the four games?
Yeah, Randy Shannon's done a great job of implementing an aggressive mentality on the defensive side of the ball. Our kids have really adjusted to some of the schematic schemes and changes from a year ago, and really playing better every single week. We're playing really aggressive. Our defensive line is playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, creating sacks. Our first 3 weeks of the season, we had three turnovers in each ball game. Had another pick last week. That comes because all 11 guys are operating as one. He's done a phenomenal job of just allowing that group to grow every single week, and really appreciative of what the defensive staff is doing. We're playing great football there, and got to continue to grow on the special teams side of it as well.
All right, so finally, I know you're concerned about winning that day and being 1-0, but when you look at the offense the way it is right now, when you look at the defense and the way they're flying around, what's the upside here? How good can this team be?
We're going to be as good as our competitive spirit is every Saturday afternoon, and our willingness to grow every single day and prepare in a great way. If we do that, sky's the limit, but you got to take it one day at a time.
All right, so UFC 229 is tomorrow night in Vegas. The weigh-in is today, but the fight between Khabib and Conor McGregor actually started a long time ago, and then it continued yesterday at that pre-fight presser. Now, the pre-fight press conference typically has two fighters. Yesterday's presser did not. Khabib was there on time. Conor was not. And you should not be surprised. If you are, you should not be. The question was not whether Conor would be on time. The question was, how was Khabib going to respond to Conor being on time or not being on time? And the answer is, he was not happy. We knew Conor would show up whenever the hell he wanted to. Khabib, though, was not going to wait for it. Khabib hit the stage at exactly 3 p.m. Right before Dana White, he declared, quote, "It's 3 p.m. This conference is beginning." Look, I respect the hustle. I respect the attempt. But let's be real about this. That press conference was not beginning until Conor arrived. And Khabib is the champion. Khabib is the betting favorite. Khabib probably wins that fight. I'm not saying that Conor won't or can't. We can get into the matchup. But Khabib is the champion and the favorite and probably will win that fight by submission in the later rounds. Except that press conference does not start until Conor shows up. Khabib, on the other hand, tried to end it early. Quote, "I don't need to wait for nobody. This is 3 p.m. Fans is here. Media is here. Everybody is here. I don't think about him. I have a schedule. 3 p.m. This conference has to begin because I have a schedule. I have to make weight. I have to worry about myself. Why do I have to think about him if he comes or not? If somebody is late, it's not my problem." End quote. No, it's not. It's definitely not his problem. And I can respect that he got up and left. He's not going to get suckered into Conor's mind games. But that was still a big brother, little brother move from McGregor. Khabib left, and then what do you know? Conor McGregor shows up and Connor showed up as only Connor can.
And Notorious is coming on stage.
What's up, Ireland? The artists are back in town, I love it. The traffic is heavy out there, you know yourself.
Well, Connor, we appreciate you coming. Can you give us an idea? What was going on this afternoon with your late arrival? And was this a conscious decision? Maybe a little bit of a mind game? Maybe a little psychology?
He knew what he signed up for. I've been late in this. The traffic is a little heavy. There must be a McGregor fight going on. I don't know where the little fool is. He's better off running anyway. You know yourself, I bet you he was saying a load of up here. He didn't say anything the last time, so, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. These things happen.
It is what it is. There was traffic. It must be a McGregor fight. He went on, quote, I did not plan this. I tried to get here. Like I said, I'm only a couple of minutes late for bleep's sake. That mad backwards bleep. He should have stayed put. But whatever, that's a sign. He doesn't want to be around me. He doesn't want to be around these people. He is petrified, and that's it. He said nothing in New York, and I guarantee he was saying bleep while I wasn't here, so that's the truth of it all. End quote. Look, I know that traffic on the Strip and in Vegas in general can be pretty rough, especially during fight week and with the Golden Knights going last night. But I highly doubt that Connor was hitting that with the old Google Maps expected arrival time. You know what his expected arrival time is, Connor McGregor? Connor McGregor's expected arrival time was whenever the hell he wanted to arrive. And that was most definitely going to be after Khabib got sick of waiting for him and bounced. As for Connor's mood, my man's hungry. Very, very hungry.
I'm starving. I am starving for this man's head. I am going to eat him alive in here, and I don't give a bollocks. So there's no way this man's hungrier than me. There's nobody that's hungrier than me in this game. I don't stop. I'm too on it. I'm 24/7 on this game, so that's it.
I don't give a bollocks either. I mean, for all the talk about whether or not it's personal for Khabib, this is obviously very personal to Connor. Really personal. He said, quote, there is way deeper bleep than just a fight on Saturday night. I'm going to settle this the noble way for myself and then see what happens after that. Bleep peace. There will never be peace here. I always say you should aim for peace. But if you can't aim for peace, aim between the eyes. I'm going to aim right between that man's eyes. And this is never over. Never, ever, ever over. End quote. God, the guy, he's unbelievable. There's nobody like him. I mean, normally, gladiators, combatants, you've seen this before, right? With all the hate, all the bitterness. Once it's over, these guys have fundamental respect because it takes a different sort of cat to get in the cage in the first place. You always see this after fights. Not this one, apparently. Connor's saying it's never over. It will never be over. And speaking of eyes, Connor had a pretty graphic thought about that as well. Quote, bleep him and his mentality. I don't give a bleep about him. My heart is black towards this man, towards his team, towards his people. I can truly see the inside of that man's head and smile. I don't give a bleep about him or his people. Like I said, there is way deeper bleep than just a fight on Saturday night. So I'm here. I'm going to settle this the noble way myself and then see what happens after that. There is no better salesman than Conor McGregor. He's the best. Nobody has ever promoted a fight like Conor McGregor. But that's not what that is to me. I mean, he hates that guy that much. And Khabib hates him that much. And I think it's not going to be over after Saturday night. And then Connor really went Connor when he said this. Quote, I am ruthless here. I am coming to put a hole in this man's skull. Dig my knuckle into his orbital bone. And that's what I'm going to do. End quote. So now we've moved on. The proceedings have moved on to hole in the skull. Smack. Dig my knuckle into his orbital bone, smack. I mean, that's next level. That's next level even for Conor McGregor. I knew we were going to get some quotes at that press conference, but I didn't know that we were going to get such an important anatomy lesson. And as always, we got Mystic Max prediction.
It's another day setting the bar high and knocking it out of the park. I plan on knocking that man's nose straight into the nosebleeds. That's what's going to happen on Saturday night.
I'm going to knock that man's nose straight into the nosebleeds. That's what's going to happen Saturday night. That is fantastic. So now we're just over 24 hours out. And I can't decide what I want more, the fight to start or the buildup to continue, because the buildup's been awesome. The more they're around each other, the more they hate each other, and the fiercer it gets. I mean, there was some smack talk from Connor yesterday that I couldn't even play on the air, ever. So tomorrow night means the fight begins, but it also means the end of the smack. And right now, I'm not sure that I want that to happen. The buildup is never as good as a fight, any fight. But if this fight is as good as this buildup, it's going to be an all-timer. And Dana White did come on the program earlier this week and said, this is the biggest fight in the history of this company. Most of all, he is the host of the Pat McAfee Show, is the star of the upcoming documentary, Pat McAfee, Professional Baseball Player, which we'll get into. Damn, Pat, that's a lot of ground to cover. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hanging out. How are you, Jim? Thank you so much for having me. This place is incredible. And you look damn good, by the way.
Not bad for an old guy, right?
Not great. Not just not bad. Great. You look good. Thanks
for
having
me. It's so good to have you here. Now, you and I, God, we got to cover a lot of ground. We could talk about a lot of things. Let me ask you about last night's game first. We can get into the X's and O's because you can break that down. But I got a more important question. Adam Vinatieri, 45 years old. This dude's in his 23rd season as one legendary leg admiring another one. What do you make of this guy hitting a 54-yard field goal last night?
I absolutely love it, especially back in New England, too, a place where he did a lot of damage and a lot of work for that team. Every time we went up there and played, whenever he was with the Colts, they would cheer for him going onto the field, cheer for him coming off of the field. But during the game, they were ruthless. When he missed that first one, I got a little bit worried. I thought he was a little bit rattled, but you should never, ever doubt the GOAT, the legend, 54 through midway through the uprights, so he's just the absolute man. That's what he is.
That dude does not rattle, right? I mean, to put this in perspective, this guy ran down Herschel Walker on a kickoff return in 1996.
Yeah,
I mean, how insane is that?
Very standard def footage, too. You check that on the internet now. It's like it's back from back in the Cold War days, which it was. Adam Vinatieri is just the man. There will never be another human like him. Never.
Pat McAfee joining me in studio. All right, now you had William McGinnis. I love William McGinnis. You had him and Adam Schefter on your podcast. You talked about, quote, the worst play in NFL history. For those who do not remember, what was the worst play in NFL history, and what's the story behind it?
Well, the worst play was when we tried to run a fake punt down 7 in the third quarter, and the fake punt was basically an opportunity to hopefully draw them off sides or have them have too many men. Our entire team basically acts like we're sprinting off the field. We line up, we snap the ball, 5 people sack them. Patriots get the ball, and plus 45, they score a touchdown, game over. That's all she wrote. And the only name that's synonymous with that play is mine, because it's at the bottom of the GIF. Pat McAfee, right at the bottom, because it was a fake punt play, and it was terrible. Now you have the butt fumble. Obviously, the butt fumble is something remarkable. You have the goal line play by the Seahawks where old buddy throws the interception. You have a lot of plays that could be very dumb, but this particular one was one that if you look at it, boy, there was not much chance
of success.
Seriously,
dude, worse than all that? Worse than all that, or is it just so close to home that it involved you? I mean, is it really the worst play ever? Worse than the butt fumble?
Schematic-wise, I think it really looks bad because it was just one big miscommunication. But anytime you run in somebody's ass and you have a fumble, that's going to be a tough day, too. Sanchez didn't deserve that.
Pat McAfee joins me in studio. All right, Pat, now the fact that you and I are having this conversation is pretty amazing, due in part to a poker game in a restaurant basement when you were in high school. Before we get to the poker game, you actually were a killer soccer player growing up. In fact, what kind of a soccer player were you? How good were you?
I was pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed eating. I didn't love running as much, but so I was a little bit of a bigger guy, but I had a very strong leg, and that's what led to me kicking footballs. The poker game was something I got very, very lucky with a nice Jack 9 play that hit. That was back when Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker.
Okay.
So every person in America who was either out of shape or kid thought they could hit millions if they played poker. There was poker everywhere. I got into a good game, won $1,400, went down to a kicking camp, hit a 65-yard field goal, missed a 70-yard field goal, flew home. Next morning, West Virginia offered me a scholarship, and that's all she wrote.
Dude, let's not gloss over this. I mean, you were in that game. Were you in that game because that was just something to do that night, or were you in that game to get money to go to that camp?
To get money to go to the camp, and I did not think it was going to happen.
Did your parents know that you were in that game?
No, they didn't, but they told me they wouldn't fly me down to Miami, too, because it was $1,500 basically for flight, hotel, and camp fee, and it was like a week ahead of time, and at that point, I had already committed to Kent State to be a Golden Flash, and my dad said, you ain't going to Miami. He's big Yinzer from Pittsburgh, and especially for that price. So I borrowed $100 from one of my rich friends, won $1,400. My dad gave me the extra $100, flew down there. It's all
what did the old man say when you came home with $1,400 in your pocket and told him what you were going
to
do?
I came home like 4:30 a.m. too. So if you win at those games, you have to stay. You can't just get up and leave.
It's not you can't.
Yeah, it's not like a casino. So basically,
not unless you want to get knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just hanging on for dear life with the money. Get home like 4:35 a.m. when my dad was going to work. Basically, put the cash cash in his pocket and said, I'm going to Florida. Let's make this happen. It's a very cool moment. And I think my dad would say that I'm a bit of pain in the ass, but that was a magical morning for both of us.
All right. So what was West Virginia like?
Wild.
Yeah. Tell me.
Well, I mean, we burn couches whenever we celebrate.
Well, we did. We did that in Santa Barbara, too, though.
I don't know if you guys had as much to celebrate as us, though. We had a good time. I got a chance to ride Pat White and Steve Slayton's coattails to a lot of wins, a lot of big moments. I wasn't as serious as I should have been. I kicked in, punted in college, and I partied a lot. I should have taken it much more serious, but I enjoyed the hell out of my time.
Do you think, Pat? I mean, like, not to get too heavy about it, but weren't we all like that in college? Didn't we all party a little too much in college?
Well, I played soccer, so I played soccer growing up. So then I would only just show up on Fridays and kick at our game. So I never went to practice. I never had to do anything like that. So whenever I was just kicking and punting, it was a much easier life. I'm like, oh, I don't have to run 9 miles every day. So I would go out, wouldn't go to many classes, never got the degree. Me, Steve Jobs, Albert Einstein, Kanye West, all college dropouts. But then I had a good time.
Look, you're doing great. Would you go back? Is the degree important to you at all?
I don't know.
You're good, man. Right?
Maybe like the Rodney Dangerfield. If it all comes crashing down. If everything comes crashing down, I'll go
back. You ain't
going
back, dude.
I hope not. I think college is a big scam anyways. You got a lot of people in debt forever. Just something to think about.
No, that's something to think about. There are people I know that will never pay those loans down. All right, so you end up going in the NFL. Bill Polian drafts you. Yeah. You mentioned you did some punting. When he drafted you with the Colts and said, you're going to be our punter, what did you think?
I kicked in the Senior Bowl field goals. The Dallas Cowboys were supposed to draft me as a kicker. Everybody had talked to me basically about being a kicker until Bill Polian called me on draft day and said, we're drafting you to punt, and we think you're athletic enough to figure it out. And I was like, well, damn, we're going to find out, Bill, if you're right or not, if you deserve this Hall of Fame jacket. Because in college, we did the rollout punt. So it was a rugby punt, basically run and just let it roll on the ground. And he literally told me, I think you're athletic enough to figure it out. So I just started bombing balls for the Colts. In my first couple of years, I had no idea why something went well or why something went bad. I had no clue. I would hit like a 60-yard punt and be like, oh, that was awesome. No clue why that happened. And then I'd shank one, and I was like, no clue why that happened either. So it was a big learning process, and I thank Bill Polian every single morning.
Pat McAfee joins me in studio. Now, Pat, you had that legendary night where you had a little too much fun, went out, took a swim in a canal in Indianapolis.
Allegedly, Jim.
Allegedly, all right? Well, I mean, allegedly or reportedly. I mean, you show up and you got no shirt on, you're all wet, and the cops are there. So
I'm a sweater, yeah. So I sweat, Jim. I sweat.
Is that what you told the cops? They buy it?
I told them it was raining. Uh-huh. So I said there was a chance it was raining. I told the truth them numerous times. They're like, hey, I don't really remember what has happened. Tell us why you're wet or you're going to jail. So I told them it was raining.
Okay,
right?
It was raining. So when they asked
report, they write, he said it was raining. We were in the middle of like a 60-day drought at this point. So it was just them piling on.
So, bro, when they asked you where your shirt was, they were piling on. But when they said, hey, where's your shirt? What did you tell them?
I said, well, I'm not a betting man. I mean, but I would assume, and that was a lie. I lied to them right there. I'm not a betting man, but I would assume it's wherever I got wet at. So wherever it was raining, I think is the probable chance where it could have
been. Okay, and when they said to you, did you have anything to drink? What was your response?
Oh, the last thing I remember was ordering 100 shots of tequila, sir, right down the road right there. And I think I would say, yes, I had a few things to drink.
All right, Pat, look, we've all had a night, right? We've all had a night, and that's how that went. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, would you and I be having this conversation right now if not for that night? And how did that impact you going forward?
So I was living very reckless. I was not a person that was supposed
to. You were 22, right? 23?
I was 21 when I got drafted to the NFL. 22 then after the undefeated season we had until we chose to lose. And then Drew Brees and his dumb baby beat us in the Super Bowl. And I have money for the first time in my life. I take care of my parents. I go live very hard. I was still doing the college drinking schedule I had, partying schedule. I figured, Peyton Manning, I don't have to punt that much. And we go to the Super Bowl. I hit the jackpot here. This is the scratch off of all scratch offs here, being an Indianapolis Colt. That night really put a lot of things in perspective. And Bill Polian and I had a nice heart to heart after that. He suspended me for a game. He fined me. I ended up with like a $40,000 fine.
What did he say, Pat? What was his heart to heart?
He said, today is going to be the day that's a pivot point for you. You're either going to really make this something or you're going to disappear. It's one or the other. And it was a cool moment where I kind of realized that there was a lot more at risk than I was just being kind of immature about. And it really did change the entire path of my career.
Hey, Pat, I mean this sincerely. I've done this a long, long time. I've seen guys start and end their careers, entire careers, and I've seen them try and transition to whatever it is they're going to do off the field. You've made an amazing transition into life after football. And literally, I mean, you're becoming a big-time content provider, a big-time media mogul with the Pat McAfee Show. You've made it look pretty easy. What has been your attitude and your approach after football and to your program and your content?
I am an idiot. I am a full-blown idiot, and I just so happen to have a very basic palate. So if I find something funny, there's a good chance there's a lot of people that find it funny. If I think something tastes good, there's a lot of people that think it tastes good. I have a very basic palate. And for me, after I got in trouble, Twitter became my means to tell people, like, hey, I apologize for being an idiot. I'm going to try to make this right. The city and state of India, city of Indianapolis, state of Indiana kind of rallied behind me. And it's just been kind of 140 characters at a time built up this following that I very much appreciate and thank. And we're kind of on this ride together. So when I do a podcast, they follow me there. Whenever I get a chance coming to the jungle,
there you
they
go, man.
Follow me in here. It's just I got a good group of people that follow along with me.
No, you do. You've got a great, great base. And I think part of the reason for that is you will say things or do things that, well, you're not afraid, man. You're just not afraid. And you've got a different point of view, right? You have to have a point of view. And you tell some great stories. As an example, you've got Jim Irsay. This dude had a special glass box for games, right?
Yeah.
Does that box literally exist solely so this guy can get his smoke on during games?
I would assume that is the case. I wasn't there when Jim Irsay and probably Paul McCartney and the Beatles were there designing the stadium.
The Beatles.
But I would assume that the reason why it is there is so that he can blow some squares through the entire game and the neighbors aren't getting affected.
Let me just jump in. Clones, do not tell me why the Beatles were there for the glass box. All right?
I don't need to hear that.
I already know where they're going with that.
Hey, brother.
Listen, it's part of you being a media mogul. You've got a doc, all right? You've got a documentary, but not what they would expect, but the Pat McAfee professional baseball player documentary. Now, let's be straight. How much baseball had you played before this?
Zero. My dad hated baseball. He thought it was too boring, so he had me play soccer. Not a smart decision. Hindsight's always 50-50. Cam Newton said that. It's one of those situations where I was asked if I wanted to play, and I'd never played growing up. And they said, we'll start you at right field. The Washington Wild thing said, we'll start you at right field. You get three at-bats. You'll do the whole thing. You'll be a professional baseball player for a day. And I was like, sure, sounds good. Sign me up. And I didn't really think about it until the night before. The guy who was pitching to me, I think, was drafted by the Brewers, had a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. I was just about to stare that down. And it turned into this documentary where I was mic'd up the entire time. My friends were commentating in my ears, so there's a constant conversation between us. And it is I honestly believe it'll go down. People are saying, Jim, I would never say. People are saying it's the greatest comedic sports documentary of all time.
You know this as well as anybody as an athlete. If somebody were to say, people would say, would you not turn that around and say, Who are these people?
Yeah, what people? I would, but in this particular case, I need you to not say that. I just need you to just take it for what it is.
Hey, Pat, what are people saying?
What
would people say, Pat?
People are saying that it's the greatest comedic sports documentary of all time, and when you purchase it from PatMcAfeeShow.com.
Have people seen it yet?
Just only people I know.
Okay,
mom is
your
told
people.
Me it's good.
Your people.
My
okay.
mom told me it's good. You also enter the greatest raffle of all time.
Right.
Anytime you purchase the documentary for $3.33, October 7th, October 10th, $5, you're in the greatest raffle of all time.
What can you win?
Two good Super Bowl tickets, two good World Series tickets, two good WrestleMania tickets. Shout out SeatGeek. $1,000 free play from MyBookie, Movement Watch, Lisa Mattress, the $500 Visa gift card, Game Worn autographed Adam Vinatieri jersey, baseball bat signed, and a job shadowing on my friend Nick, who works for me.
Bro, that was amazing. You've got this thing figured out. That's how you nail a pitch. All right, so if they want to buy the doc, where do they go to buy the doc?
PatMcAfeeShow.com, PatMcAfeeShow.com, PatMcAfeeShow.com. October 7th, 3:33 pre-order. The raffle goes until October 14th at 11:59 p.m. $5 price starts October 10th.
So what do you like better, this life, or if you could go back and do the NFL life all over again, which would you do?
This life? Yeah, pretty comfortable life going on right now.
You don't hurt as much now, right? You feel pretty good.
I feel good. I feel good, and also if I mess up, I'm not ruining the lives of an entire city. You know what I mean?
Now, is there something to that? I mean, do you feel that kind of pressure? Like when things did not go well and you did something to hurt that team, would they come down on you? Do you feel that?
No, I think the biggest thing about being a professional athlete is you don't need the outside sources to come down on you. I think if you see the people that are great, they're their hardest critic.
Uh-huh.
So anytime, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I shanked a ball because I feel like I've screwed over a lot of people's happiness, myself included. It's just the way it goes.
Now, you sat down in New York with my guy Gary Vee recently. Or there's nobody like Gary Vee. I've never met anybody like Gary Vee. What was the Gary Vee experience?
You gotta own it, Jim.
I'm trying to, man.
You gotta own it, Jim.
I'm trying to. Look, if we have to match Gary Vee for intensity, for energy, for hustle, we're just gonna get our asses kicked. It's not gonna work. But you sat with him. What was that like?
Well, I was there for 3 minutes and 45 seconds, Jim.
For real?
I had a 3 minutes and 45 second meeting with him. I like Gary Vee a lot. He's helped me out a lot whenever it comes to just transition here from football. I enjoy following him. I enjoy that. I went into his office. He's got a bunch of little, it's like Steve Jobs with all those little people in there. Just who knows what they're doing on their computers. They look busy though. And it was just, it was an awesome moment. I'm a big fan of Gary Vee.
What a game. How play is that?
Yeah.
going on? A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. It is awesome to be with you. Nice to have you here in the jungle. Best time of the sports year. So many good things to cover. But where I really want to start is with America's team. Cowboys, Packers, America's team. The Cleveland freaking Browns.
Was down and the ball was short.
Nobody is a bigger proponent of scoreboard than me. If you're blaming the officials, you should be blaming yourself. And the Browns were blaming themselves after that game. But they got jammed by the refs. They were jammed hard by the refs.
Earl Thomas wasn't happy with his contract.
That was a literal you to the Seahawks. Not the players, but to the organization. Steve Smith Sr., he appeared to flip off the sideline as he was carted off the field.
Appear would not be the accurate statement. He flipped him the bird. You also know you could cut off your damn finger cutting a ham and cheese sandwich.
Le'Veon Bell's in one piece right now. Earl Thomas is not, and that's not fair.
Once again, Europe.
Damn about rankings or bank accounts or popularity. Man, they just love kicking our ass, don't they? And I would too if I were them.
It's time to kill this event, Old Yeller style. Oh, and Alvy, I really want to be a part of that montage, butthole.
Gotta be honest, I would have racked that call.
Rack him!
Dennis Dodd is my guest.
Jim, I am great. The flung poo drop will never get old. I'm still laughing. Someone took a really large dump, you know?
Tom Verducci.
You can book it right now. The team that signs Bryce Harper is going to be the team that offers him the most money. Period.
That's a clown question, bro.
Get used to it, Bronco fans. He's only 23, which means that barring something terrible, Patrick Mahomes will be ruining your weekends for a long, long time.
He pulls a Houdini!
Argel in Louisiana.
Jim, it's pronounced Argel. It's French.
No, dude, you did not do that. You can't recreate that. You can't go back. That's not what happened.
We need this all playoff. Sorry, kids, let's go!
With the division on the line and all the pressure, Justin Turner, quote, a huge set of balls. Dana White joining us.
Connor wants to keep this on his feet and try to knock Habib out, and Habib's going to try to take this to the ground. He smashes people. When he gets them down, they don't get back up.
We had some opportunities.
I'm not saying he's the reason they lost. I'm saying Buddy Black, his good friend, turned him inside out. But hey, how about them Bears?
How about them Bears?
Quarterback Will Greer.
Despicable Me's great. The Minions are great. Big fan of Gru. You got to watch it, you know.
Marcus Mariota is the man.
Marcus Mariota is my guest.
It was an incredible win. Those feelings that you have after a game like that, it's hard to beat. It was a special moment.
Happy freaking jungle anniversary, Hawk. You don't celebrate jungle anniversaries, at least not 2 years. You're renting, not buying.
I have a grande iced Americano for Jim.
Keith didn't move into Austin's old spot because it was vacant, Jim. He moved to avoid all those asparagus farts Hawk's been letting go during the show now.
Tom Haberstroh is my guest.
We're trying to keep up with all these images of ourselves and reflections of ourselves for the various different platforms rather than focusing on human interaction.
All rise. Here comes the judge.
Twiddle. Yankee Sox is always a great matchup for us. Signed Sir Paul and the Lads. Why would Paul McCartney and the Lads be into the Sox and Yankees? Very good friend of the program. Ariel, nice to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'm a friend of the program now.
You
Holy
are.
Smokes. After just one appearance, I'm honored.
Cal in Vegas.
I mean, you people stink when you wash. You tell that little nerd, Alvin, do a job and give me a golden ticket for crying out loud. I'm a legitimate smack-off competitor. Unlike bags like Fat in fat. L.A.
In L.A., fat. Hey, Fat, what's up?
That's right, fat in L.A. right here, baby. You're welcome.
William McGinnis, A Football Life.
Been there the whole ride since the birth of this thing. Appreciate you and your honesty and your commentary and all the things you've done. You've been doing it a long time, man. You're one of the best.
500 in the regular season career.
Even the Hood himself had something nice to say.
It's a lot of touchdown passes to a lot of different guys, too. No quarterback I'd rather have than Tom Brady.
Yeah, so, hey, come on over here. Hey, I want to give you a big kiss. Come on over here. Hey,
Oh, yeah, I'm starving for this man's head.
What happened to the good callers, Jimmy? Does Vic and O'Cal no longer call your show? He was me all-time favorite. After I heard him back in the day, I absolutely dismembered that comedian, Jay Lab.
The fights would erupt. We couldn't hear the jungle, so we'd smash their boombox. The JVC would tumble off the table.
I guarantee Brad and Corona leave Smack-Off 25 in a body bag with a maple leaf plastered on
body
it.
Body bag!
Sincerely.
Butthole.
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 We should fire every person that was on that field.
Meredith Baxter Burney.
Greg Jamies.
Calista.
Perform.
Big stadium.
Thanks, Jim. In time.
Dopo plays.
Hey, baby, Kelsey,
dude, do our podcast.
Hit me up, brah.
Word to your mother.
Good night now! Good night now!